Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. Better Man is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com.
These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 388. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's going good, man. Another good week of baseball in the books, and ready to break some of it down. It's going to be a good one.
Yes, sir. It's our last one as the Clegg Cross duo here. I'm sure everyone has seen, you know, all the announcements. We won't get super into that, but yeah, this is our last one as a duo, at least for now. Show will still be continuing on, of course. Chris has his thing he'll be speaking more about on his Twitter, so be on the lookout for that. But make sure you continue to support, you know, hopefully you continue to support this show, support everything Chris does. We're still going to be pumping out a lot of content, each of us moving forward. So, but we're going to end this era strong with another good episode of the Tool Shed today. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at Chris Clegg, MILB. I am Eric Cross, MLB. Show is at Tool Shed Pod. If you enjoy the pod, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com, for more work from each of us. And make sure you check out all the great content over on Rotoballer and win more with Rotoballer's MLB Premium Pass. Gain access to expert tools and advice from proven winners. Import your leagues with TeamSync and get expert advice customized for your league-specific settings. Win more with Rotoballer's lineup assistant tools, free agent finders, prop picks, and the number one DFS lineup optimizer. It also includes prospect rankings, dynasty rankings, and more content from Chris and I. Our premium pass comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. Go to rotoballer.com/radio and use the discount code TOOLSHED at checkout. All right, so very hitter-centric episode here, both with major leagues and prospects, but we'll start out with a couple of fun young hitters that are breaking out and potentially joining, you know, the elite ranks this season. One was already fairly close, now cementing his status as an elite guy, and the other one a little bit further off, but having a phenomenal start. We'll start with O'Neill Cruz. Already has 8 home runs, 12 steals so far this year, coming off a 21 homer, 22 steal year last year, slashing .267, .370, .567 so far. Elite quality of contact as usual from Cruz, even a little bit better than it was last year. K rates come down about, you know, 4.5% down to 25.9. Walk rates up to 13.9%. You know, he's still pretty, you know, inconsistent at times. And he's still, you know, the contact skills, you know, are still a bit below average. So, you know, he probably won't be the highest average guy, but if he's going to stick in this .260 range, I mean, with the more walks, less strikeouts, that's fun to see. I mean, he can get up there. I still would take Ellie De La Cruz over him, but Chris, do you think there's going to be a big gap between Ellie De La Cruz and O'Neill Cruz moving forward?
It could get interesting, I believe. I mean, seeing O'Neill run more is a big thing. So that obviously matters a lot. He's already got 12 stolen bases, and he's had just 108 plate appearances. So more of a willingness to run for O'Neill Cruz is big. We know there's big power, Last year, he went 21-22 in home runs and stolen bases. And this year, he's already had 8, 12, and a 6 to the plate appearances. So I'm not saying he's going to pace and do that. Like, he's probably not going to hit 50 homers and steal 60-plus bags. But the power's there. There's been virtually no change in that. I mean, O'Neill Cruz ran an elite barrel rate last year of 15.7%. He has a 22% barrel rate this year, which is just pretty, pretty absurd. We know he can hit the cover off the ball. There's never been any questioning that, but the quality of contact is improved. The XFOB on contact is up. We look at how he's handled breaking balls. Much improvement there. He's dropped about 10 percentage points in whiff rate against breaking balls, which is notable. And against changeups, it's about a 15 percentage point improvement in contact rate. I think that's huge to see. And while the zone contact rates are relatively similar, and the overall whiff rate improved about 2 percentage points, so it's not a huge jump, I think the swing decisions in general are just better, and it's paying off. He's hitting mistake pitches. He's picking his spots well, and I think we're seeing Cruz jump earlier in counts, which then allows him to do more damage early rather than getting deeper in the count and getting pitches that aren't as easy to hit. So the walk rate is up, though, which is still a thing. So I really like what I've seen. I think he checks a lot of boxes. Is O'Neill Cruz going to pace this? No, but O'Neill Cruz is a legit threat to hit 30 to 40. He may have 40 home runs this year. It wouldn't shock me a bit. And at this rate, if he keeps running at this pace, he's going to steal a lot of bases. So yeah, O'Neill Cruz could be a first round type. He certainly looks like it right now. We'll hope that that continues. It's especially fascinating given that he's playing kind of completely out of position in the outfield. So I don't love that for him. He's not been great out there at all, but the bat's going to play. So it's working.
Yeah. I mean, he's always had this upside, but you know, little things here and there limited him. You know, the higher ground ball rate, that wasn't like alarming. It was 48% last year. He's dropped that over 10% this year. More pulled fly balls in the air, a higher fly ball rate in general, a little bit more line drives as well. That's encouraging to see. And even with, you know, the contact skills, both, you know, in zone and overall being, you know, below average, they're not terrible. And we've seen guys that hit the ball as hard as Cruz does, you know, they can run a bit lower contact rates, you know, in the, you know, mid to upper 70s zone and, you know, like upper 60s overall and still be fine because of how hard they hit the ball. That kind of makes up for it a little bit. And, you know, Cruz is elite of the elite in terms of everything to do with quality of contact. His bat speed, I think, is second in baseball right now behind Junior Caminero. So, you know, 90 percentile sprint speed, everything he does, his, you know, in terms of, you know, speed, power is there. Yeah, I wish he kind of moved back to shortstop as well. But, yeah, I think you're going to see Cruz kind of cement himself as a top 25 or higher dynasty asset this year and yeah, maybe even top 15. That's kind of a hard range to get into. But, you know, I think he's actually, you know, why can't he be right in that same range as, like, you know, all, you know, Jackson Churio and James Wood and all them? Yeah, I think he's actually in that tier now. It's kind of a big, fun tier, and we'll see kind of anybody emerges from that tier to jump up into that top 10 or so. Cruz definitely could. The other guy here, another guy in the NL Central with Pete Crow Armstrong of the Chicago Cubs, off to a 284, 328, 523 start. He is tied with O'Neill Cruz for the league lead in stolen bases with 12. Also has 22 runs scored and 5 home runs so far. You know, Chris, the, you know, metrics aren't quite as sexy here with PCA, but, you know, he's a elite defender with a strong arm. Like, that's to keep him in the lineup even when he is struggling. He's a premium athlete, premium runner as well, 96th percentile sprint speed. You know, quality of contact is kind of middle of the road for the most part and doesn't really walk a ton either. So, you know, where are you at with PCA now? I mean, it's always been a fun profile. You know, had some good numbers in the minor leagues. How high do you feel comfortable pushing him in your dynasty rankings?
Yeah, he's a fascinating one because the upside is pretty immense. We're seeing it right now. And like from a ranking standpoint, like he's been a top 10 performer this year. You look under the hood, the interesting thing is like everything's pretty similar. It's not like he's changed much this year. So that's my biggest question mark is like, how sustainable is it, I guess? We know he's going to run. Like, PCA is going to run. What kind of average does he hit for? That's the question. The outfield skills are elite. Like, he's a platinum glover, probably. Like, that's how good we're talking about here. His barrel rate's right in line with 2024, so nothing stands out there. The average exit velocity, right in line with 2024. Launch angle, sweet spot rate, all very similar. The ex-Wobicon is up, so that is worth noting. The strikeout rate, half a tick lower. The walk rate's the same. Like, I'm struggling to parse the data and say, like, hey, here's where he's doing things different. He is lifting the ball a little more. The error percentage is up. It's about 7 percentage points, so that's pretty notable as well. As far as contact goes, the zone contact has jumped pretty substantially, so you can look at that and say, all right, zone contact, 73.2% last year up to 82.4% this year, so that's a big step forward. The approach, still not great, chasing at a 40% clip, 40.7, 41.4% last year, so still pretty much in line. And the overall contact rate, looking at it, is it's improved. So the biggest jump we've seen from PCA is contact. If that sticks, yes, the batting average can stick too. Hitting 284 right now, he's always going to run lower OBPs. But what kind of power output should we expect from PCA? 5 home runs in 119 plate appearances. Last year, he hit 10 in 410 plate appearances. I think 15 is definitely in the cards. And he's probably a 30 to 40 stolen base type. So if you got a 15 home run, 40, let's say 15, 40, like, I think there's pretty good value there. Yep. But is that like a top 25 type player? Like, I don't think so, because I don't expect the batting average hold here. If he hits 284 all year, then it's a different story. But I'm not sure we see that batting average sustain, just given the approach. It'll be curious to see. I mean, I like PCA. Is he a fantasy star? No, but is he a real-life star? I think so, because that glove's just absolutely spectacular.
Yeah, and I don't think he's a star either for fantasy, but I think he could be that tier below it. Whatever you want to call it, the tier below star, just very good, or if there's a better word than that. But, yeah, the power, as we said, it's middle-of-the-road power, but at least he hits it at ideal angles, which absolutely helps. I mean, he's got a decent sweet spot rate. His pull error rate is 20.2%. He's dropped the ground ball rate about 7% this year, more fly balls in general, which definitely helps. And the fact that he's increased the zone contact by around 9% is pretty encouraging as well. But yeah, chase rate, as Chris mentioned, still very, very high. I do expect the average to tick back down a bit as well. Not down to like the 237 he was at last year, but, you know, maybe it's around like 260 as opposed to 280 plus. But yeah, if he's 260, you know, 15 home runs, yeah, I'm kind of right there, 15 and 40. I think that's still like a top 50-ish player moving forward. And if these contact gains can stick and he maybe can get 270, 280, you know, he's probably going to, you know, score a good amount of runs as well. That Cubs lineup is pretty fun throughout. I think they're one of the best lineups in baseball right now. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of staying power here, just not, yeah, I don't think he's going to be elite and, you know, a top 10 guy or anything like that moving forward. Another couple guys, very NL Central-centric to start this show, going over to the Cincinnati Reds here. We got Noelvi Marte, who's having a really good last week or so. I mean, we know the 2024 season for Marte was very rough. He was suspended for the first half of the season, and then once he did come back, he just wasn't the same. Performance was pretty bad, but he had that 5-hit game back on April 20th. Yeah, 2 of those hits were off of position players, one of which was Gary Sanchez. The other one, I forget who it was, but still had 3 hits off pitchers that game, and he's had, 7, 8, 12 hits in his last 6 games with 3 home runs overall here. I mean, Chris, are you buying back in at least to some degree with Noelvi? I know it's just been, you know, like a week or maybe a little over a week of him kind of being back, but, you know, was a top prospect for many years, you know, through the Seattle and Cincinnati systems. Had a good rookie year, too. I mean, people kind of forget because of how bad last year was. He had some pretty solid numbers in his rookie year, both in terms of quality of contact, you know, overall contact, good sprint speed, etc. So kind of, you know, where are you at on Marte now, who is still only 23 years old?
Yeah, I think it's easy to forget how young Noel V. Marte is. I was just scrolling through his Savant page, and now I've got to look, because the funny thing, when I looked on it, he is seeing breaking balls at a 50% rate right now, which is wild. I'm curious if there's any other hitter in professional baseball that is seeing breaking balls pitched to them that much. Because when I first glanced, normally fastball unit is at the top, and it was like a 32% whiff rate. I was like, man, that's a lot of whiffs on fastballs. And then I was like, whoa, he's seeing breaking balls that much. Okay. So now I'm really curious, like, who is seeing the most number of breaking balls on like a per pitch basis? Because, man, that's quite a bit that he's seen so far from a percentage standpoint. Obviously, like, breaking balls aren't going to be easy for everybody to hit. But again, aside the point, Marte is swinging it pretty well. I think that you have to look and say, this is a guy that also has a pretty long track record of being pretty good. I think everybody kind of said Marte was not like a contact rate, but Marte's always run really good contact rates. Like, his end zone contact rates have always been like 85% plus in the minors and coming up. And then people were quick to say, well, is it like a thing where he's, you know, the steroids were helping him kind of thing? And yeah, I don't believe that steroids help you make contact. Whatever he was taking, like, it doesn't help you make contact. Is he going to see a fall off power wise? That's the interesting thing. Like, Marte's like hard hit rate's 23% right now. Doesn't match the bat speed at all. The bat speed's 74.5 miles an hour. That's like pretty high end, but the peril rate, 8.8%, the average EV around 88 miles an hour, and the hard hit rate's one of the worst in baseball, which I think is actually pretty fascinating. So I'm just kind of baffled at how many breaking balls like he's seen this year. I'm having to do the math on the fly, because I don't see a great way to search like breaking ball percent on Savant. I'm sure there's an easy way to do that.
I actually just pulled it up.
Oh, perfect. I was just totally missing it then.
Well, so far, I had to drop it to total number of pitches seen being just 100 for the threshold. Uh-huh. Yeah, he's seen the most at 47.2%. Zach Netta, who just, you know, has had, you know, about 33 play appearances as well, is right there with him. The other ones over 40%, Jorge Soler, Jackson Mero, Nick Castellanos, Mark Vientos, Jose Siri, that's no surprise, Bryce Harper, Ernie Clement, Tyler Fitzgerald, O'Neill Cruz is at 40.3%, and then Austin Hayes, who we'll talk about here in a second, at 40.2. So yeah, that's like, what, like 10, 11, 12 guys that are over 40% seeing, you know, breaking ball so far.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm kind of fascinated that he's seen that many. And will that trend continue? Yeah, it's to be determined, but I think Marte is doing what I'm seeing in the profiles, that he is pulling the ball in the air more. That's working in his favor for barrels. Like, yes, he's not hitting the balls hard, but he's getting the ball in the air, and he's getting the ball to the pool side in the air, which is pretty notable from a contact standpoint. Yeah, I mean, he's running a zone contact rate north of 80%. The overall contact rate is up about 6 percentage points. That's notable. His chase rate's down about 4 percentage points. Things you like to see, he's being super aggressive on pitches in the zone. Zone swing rate's up 6 percentage points. So here's the best thing. Your zone minus O swing rate is up now like 11 percentage points. Like, that's pretty notable. His meatball swing is up 9 percentage points. Like, his swing decisions look really, really good. Contact's good enough. And the quality of contact's been good. If he begins to hit the ball harder, then yeah, he becomes really, really interesting. I'll be curious to see, like, how much does Noel V. Marte go for in Fab this weekend? It's going to be kind of wild, I think, where he's available.
Yeah, it's given the last week he's had. And yeah, he's seen the third fewest percent of fastballs to him this year, 38.7%, only two lower, Ketel Marte and Alec Thomas. And then Pavin Smith is fourth. So three of the bottom four all being from Arizona is kind of fun. But yeah, no, Marte's only seeing 38.7% fastballs. And Yeah, it's small sample size, but he's a smashing fastball so far. 500 batting average against, and a 944 slug, 627 wOBA. It's only 19 plate appearances, obviously very, very early. But, yeah, I mean, I'm still intrigued. I mean, I've always been intrigued by Marte. Last year sucked. There's no way to slice and dice it. It was a bad year. You can't really look at any metric and be like, oh, well, that was still good. Now, it was pretty bad across the board with Marte. But given how low the perceived value has dropped, how low the price tag is in Dynasty Leagues, and you know, what we saw from him pre-2024, I mean, I think that's still a potential low-cost investment that could return a pretty sizable ROI. And if it doesn't work out, you didn't spend a lot to get him. So I think it's pretty low risk to try to go out there and get Marte right now. But and if you want to, you better do so soon, because so that price tag is probably going to keep going up and up here as the season wears on. Another guy here, Austin Hayes from the Cincinnati Reds, hit 2 home runs yesterday, now has 5 home runs and 50 plate appearances this year for Cincinnati with a 378, 440, 756 slash line. Another guy that had a rougher 2024, 255, 303, 396, only 5 home runs in 255 plate appearances. But he's walking more than he ever has so far this year. Quality of contact much higher than it's ever been. 51.5% hard hit rate, 24% barrel rate, which is almost 4 times higher than it was last year. And this has an elite 27% pull error rate. So a lot of good so far, but also a very small sample size. Hayes is still only 29. I would have guessed he's maybe more like 32 at this point, but still only 29. Are you buying a resurgence this year for Austin Hayes, Chris?
Kind of. I mean, he went to the perfect place. I mean,
yeah,
joining the Great American Ballpark was a great fit for him. And actually, like, we're seeing the park's not even mattering all that much, in my opinion, because you're running a hard hit rate north of 50%. You're running a sweet spot rate at 42%, one of the best in baseball. Barrel rate of 24%. That's nuts. Average EV of 92 miles an hour. Like, Hayes is doing a lot of the right things. Is it sustainable? No. Like, he's not going to run 24% barrel rate. He's a career 7% barrel rate. I just need him to run 10% barrel rate. And we're cooking all year with that. So the launch angles do look good. I think that's the biggest thing. And the biggest proponent in him having so many barrels is that he's hitting the ball at ideal angles so often. The ex-wOBA count of 636 is insane. His career average is 362 there. So that's fun to see. He's being aggressive, and it's paying off for Austin Hayes. I do like what I'm seeing across the board. Yes, the zone contact rate is down. But again, like, I look at who he's been his entire career and think that maybe there will be a bounce back there. And if he's doing this kind of damage, like, I'll live with a lower contact rate. You can tell that he's changed the approach, because his meatball swing rate is up 23 percentage points. So that's huge. So he's taking advantage of bad pitches, first off. I think that's a big step. Like, you have to do that. Yeah. And he's just absolutely destroying those. And honestly, like, he's producing against all pitch types pretty well. Like, the contact rates on him are inconsistent. They're not all great, but he is producing, like, the run values on all pitch types is good. And again, he's in the perfect park for his profile. Love the landing spot. I think that Austin Hayes could be someone that winds up, let's see, this is kind of wild, like, looking at the profile. I forgot it's been a couple years since he had been kind of a full-time player. He hadn't hit 20 home runs since 2021. I'd bet that he bust over that again.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of looking, yeah, he had those years 21 through 23 where he was 22 home runs and then 16, hitting in that 250 to 270 range. You know, he was pretty solid, kind of like you're like an outfield 4 type, you know, top, you know, back end top 200 player, something like that. I mean, he's never going to provide really any speed, so you kind of hope that he can hit some power. But yeah, the fact that he is having the best quality of contact of his career so far by a considerable margin, you know, hitting the ball at ideal angles in an ideal ballpark. Yeah, just stay healthy. I mean, that's obviously been a little bit of an issue for him as well. But if you can get another, you know, full season or at least 140 plus games out of him, with what he's doing right now, you know, with quality of contact and angles, yeah, I do believe that, you know, like Chris said, you could see a new career high and home runs for Austin Hayes. I mean, obviously, the average is going to drop considerably, even, you know, with zone overall contact both down like 4%. So he's probably going to be back down, you know, kind of where he's been for most of his career, 260-ish, give or take. But I don't think it's going to plummet or anything like that, given the ballpark he's in. So, yeah, I'm kind of at least buying to some degree this Austin Hayes breakout as well. We go from two current Reds to a former Red in Eugenio Suarez, who just decided to bash four home runs on Saturday night to take over the Major League lead with 10 home runs so far. He's ahead of a handful of players at nine and a bunch of eight. He leapfrogged a bunch of guys on Saturday. Really kind of weird start to the year for him. Had that really red-hot start first several games of the year. Then was pretty much a guy that you wanted on your bench for the last like 3 weeks or so until this four-homer game. Overall, he's got 10 home runs, as I mentioned, 202, 306, 564 slash line. But at the same time, you know, there's no like red flags really in terms of metrics right now. I mean, zone contact is still kind of right around league average, you know, actually a hair up from what it was last year. You know, overall contact is still kind of in that 70% range. Still, you know, elite pull air rate. He's always been a guy that hits the ball at ideal angles and hits the ball hard. And that quality of contact has gone from good to great this year. Hard hit rate just under 60%. Average EV, 94.5 miles an hour. Barrel rate, a tick over 20%. So I do think you see that average, you know, start to tick up here, kind of more into that 230 to 250-ish range where he's been the last couple of years. So I think Suarez is still, you know, if you're rebuilding, I mean, he's 33, you probably don't want have a need for Eugenio Suarez, but, you know, dynasty team needs some corner infield help, and you're a contender. I think Suarez is still a very solid target right now. But what are your thoughts here on Suarez, Chris?
Well, he's typically a second-half guy.
He hit right.
20 home runs in the second half last year's 10 in the first, and we're at 10 already in 108 plate appearances. Wild showing, four home run day. Those don't happen very often. The power's elite. I think we know that. Yep. It's no shock. I mean, one of the best hard hit rates in the game, 20% barrel rate, 94 mile an hour average EV. Like, he's a power hitter. That's exactly what Suarez is. I'd actually expect the batting average to continue to trend upward. It's interesting to look and see that down right now, given what he's shown us under the hood. I mean, the zone contact is actually the best it's been since 2018. So that's an encouraging sign that he's been that good there. The overall contact's right in line with what we've seen in the past. The swing decisions are pretty much in line with what we've seen from Eugenio Suarez for pretty much ever. So, yeah, it's interesting. I am very interested in him in, you know, most leagues where you're contending, because yeah, it's a guy that's going to give you power. I expect the batting average to come up. He hit 256 last year. He's a career 248 hitter. I really do believe that that average will continue to rise throughout the year. And if he does his normal second half thing, you're going to end up with really, really good numbers. I don't think it's going to cost you a ton of trade for Eugenio Suarez either, which is the good thing.
Yeah, it's not going to cost you much at all. Given the fact that he's 33, he's been kind of up and down for most of his career, especially with that average. But hey, he's a very consistent source of power, and that's why I like. That's why I was so in on him earlier this year, you know, both in redraft and dynasty. It's like you just pencil him in for like 30 home runs and 90 plus RBI, and usually some decent amount of runs scored as well. He's at 17 runs, 20 RBI so far. So yeah, he's kind of, yeah, the average is a bit low, but everything else has been pretty on par with what we expected from him this year. So, yeah, I still am a big fan of Eugenio Suarez. But shift our focus over to some prospects now. We want to go over a bunch of Milwaukee Brewers prospects. Chris just saw the Carolina Mudcats, the single-A team for the Brewers recently. And then we'll get into some struggling big-name prospects to close up the show. But let's hit those Milwaukee prospects right now. And very, as I commented on, I think it was like you post like the lineups or whatever, and the guy commented, it was like, that lineup is just like stupid good. I mean, obviously the two headliners are Jesus Madé and Luis Peña. You know, Made's already become, you know, an elite prospect in this game. Peña looks like the next one in line, but it goes far beyond that. Braylon Payne's on this team as well. Josh Adamczewski, who I just learned how to say his name 3 minutes ago, is hitting very well for this team as well. So we'll just kind of, you know, I'll let you just take it wherever you want to. This is a lot of players to talk about, you know, on that Carolina team.
Yeah.
We'll probably squeeze in a couple other Milwaukee guys before we get on to the next segment here. But you know, what were your thoughts seeing that Carolina mud?
Attention all cigar enthusiasts. Today, we are thrilled to introduce you CigarBid, America's number one online cigar auction site. If you're looking for unbeatable deals on every type of cigar, listen up. At CigarBid, you have the power to set your own price, often scoring top quality cigars and accessories at prices much lower than retail. Others want you to believe you're getting the best deal, but at CigarBid, you get to decide the deal. The cigar site that the rest of the industry doesn't want you to know about. Score deals at the best prices every day. They have live auctions that are fast-paced and exciting and make every bid a thrilling experience. Be sure to check out Freefall to watch the prices drop in real time, or Power Hour for the fastest-paced auction. No matter what you're looking for, you'll find it at CigarBid. Plus, CigarBid has text updates to notify you when you're outbid and get exclusive deals sent right to you. With CigarBid's unbeatable prices in their auction format, you determine the price you pay. That means you get to score top quality cigars and accessories at the price you choose. The auctions are also fast, exhilarating, and engaging. Every win feels like a victory, just like in the game of baseball when your favorite team wins. They offer a vast array of products, including cigars, merchandise, five-packs, samplers, humidors, and all of these are available 24/7. This allows you to shop at any time and find exactly what you're looking for without leaving your home. Whether you want to bid against others in a traditional lot or quick buy to ensure you get exactly what you want, there's many ways to buy. Check out the weekly Power Hour every Tuesday from 5 to 10 p.m. for the fastest-paced auctions. If you're ready to enjoy the fun and a convenient way to purchase fine cigars at great prices, visit CigarBid.com/toolshed. Happy bidding, folks.
Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. Better Man is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.
They're just loaded top to bottom. I mean, that's pretty insane lineup. Honestly, like, the most impressive were not the ones that you might think, the big, and all of them had good showings, but like Marco Dinge, he's their catcher. He looks like a major league catcher. I mean, he was a JUCO guy, went to Florida State last year. He had 15 homers at Florida State with really good kind of data across the board. And I thought he looked the part all week. Like, he good pop times behind the plate. He caught two of the four games I was at, and he threw out four base runners in the two games. He DH'd some of the others, and there's legit pop. I mean, his ninth percentile EV is up over 107 miles an hour, which is elite. Contact rate's over 80%. He probably needs to be out of single A. Like, I think that he's that good. And I don't think he'll stay there long. That's Marco Dinge. It's D-I-N-G-E-S. He's a 21-year-old, again, fourth round last year. Really, really like that profile. Josh Adamczewski just hit. I mean, that's all he did. And actually, I think I was most impressed with his glove. He is really good at second base. He made some plays. He made some throws that I walked away and I felt really good about his glove there. And so that helps when you have that kind of glove and you can swing it. How much juice is there in the bat? I think that's still the question. I actually saw some whiffs against breaking balls and changeups, but he hasn't struck out much this series. He struck out 3 times in 5 games this series. It's kind of always, it was one of those things where he would have a bad swing, and the next one he would just capitalize and punish a ball in the gap kind of thing. Lots of hits this week. He's got 8 hits in 5 games. I thought he looked really good, just a bunch of singles, but well-struck balls all around. So Josh Adamczewski, another one. And if you want that last name spelled, it's A-D-A-M, so like Adam. And then it gets funky. It's C-Z-E-W-S-K-I, so ski. Adam, yeah, Shifsky. Yeah, it's easier to say if you're just saying it right across, like down the line. But yeah, the pronunciation guide probably looks pretty interesting for that one.
I'm sure.
But yeah, he's good. He's 19. He'll turn 20 next month. Was in single A last year. He'll probably get the bump pretty soon. So hadn't even got to the big guys yet, which is crazy. But they've got a lot of names. I mean, because then you go and you've got Luis Pena, who first game of the series, he had 3 doubles. He had 4 hard-hit balls. He's playing hurt, and then he got hurt again. So he DH'd the whole series. The doubleheader on Friday, he came up limp in the last inning of the – they were down 6 runs in the top of the 7. His doubleheader's just 7 innings. And the game was out of reach, and he pulled up in that inning and then didn't play the second game, didn't play yesterday. Lineups aren't out for today, but it's a quad or hamstring based on what I saw. And honestly, like, you could tell he was not 100% all week just given how he ran. And so, I don't know. I mean, the skills are there. Like, it was hard to get a good read on his run times because he wasn't 100%. And, you know, me and the scouts around, we got anywhere from like 4.25 to 4.4 on home to first sprints. He's a fast guy. And so I know that involved him being injured. But Pena can swing it. He's not great in the field, so that'll be interesting. I didn't see him in the field, but based on the amount of errors that he's had this year, like, that's a little bit of a worry. Jesus Mate is definitely the guy. And people are like, oh, Pena over Mate. I don't think so. Jesus Mate checks the boxes, man. Like, he's just a ball player. He's a high IQ. He's the highest IQ teenager I think I've ever seen. Like, he does everything right. The bat speed is elite. Played a good shortstop, too, so that was good. He didn't play the first game of the series, and I was kind of worried because he's not played. He's been out some this year, the ankle injury. And so I was a little bit worried I wasn't going to get to see him. Of course, I didn't go last night, and he hit the grand slam, but that is what it is. I got some good looks at the swing from both sides of the plate and was impressed. The bat speed's good. Somebody in my comments threw a Francisco Lindor comp on him, and I don't hate that for like a 95th percentile outcome. Like, you know, it's an interesting like comp for sure, but it's just really good stuff all around. Like, he protects really well. He knows the strike zone extremely well. They pulled a hit and run off where he put the bat on a ball he shouldn't have, but like, it was in a 1-run game in like the top of the 6th. And I was just really impressed by his plate coverage on that hit and run as much as I wasn't even his hard hit balls that I saw. So he did a lot of good things. He checks all the boxes that you want to see, in my opinion. And we still haven't talked about Braylon Payne, who is lightning quick. He almost hit this mammoth bomb, just foul. He pulled it, just a beautiful launch, like high launch. And it was probably like 5 to 7 feet foul, but absolutely smoked. Payne's swing path's interesting, though. Like, it's a little flat. Still worry about it being a little bit slappy at times, but he can hit. He can run. He's lightning quick. I got a 4-1 on the sprint from him, so he's plus or better run times. And he makes a lot of contact. Now, he has whiffed an interesting amount this week, which that was something where I was like, okay, this is kind of fascinating that he's whiffing the amount that he is. I'm not sure where the hit tool falls, but I am a little bit concerned about strikeouts, just being honest. I think that people are going to explode on him. In fact, some people told me that he was a top 10 prospect on Twitter. I'm not there. Braylon Payne's a really good center fielder. He covers a lot of ground. He's got speed. The hit tool, the power, still a question mark in my book. Eric Batanti. Batanti's big, and he's a pretty good athlete. I thought he moved pretty well for the size, actually. He covered a lot of ground in foul territory at first base, where I was like, all right, that's it's pretty interesting. His bat's good for sure. Great series. I mean, I saw him have a 4 strikeout game, so that's like, eh. Like, he also scores some balls. I mean, saw him have several really well-hit balls. So Betances, kind of the same guy I feel like he was kind of going into seeing him for the first time. Like, it's a big power upside. I think you're probably looking at, like, plus game power or better. The hit tool, still really suspect, in my opinion. So I'll be curious to see how he hits long-term as he moves up. Still young, though, so I think that's worth noting. I mean, he's a young 19 right now, so
yep.
Not a lot to really take away there. Really deep league name, if you want one, is Luyin Alastre, Luyin Alastre. He's somebody like I just throw like a watch list tag on because he's fascinating. He's another young one. He's 19 on that team. He's an infielder by nature, but they've got him in the outfield because they have so many middle infielders. So he's just kind of out of luck. He's played second. He's played short. He's played third throughout his career, but he's playing outfield right now because they don't have the spots in the infield. He's a switch hitter. I was pretty fascinated by his bat, actually. Interesting setup, but made a lot of contact. And, you know, I looked at him and was like, okay, like somebody just to keep an eye on at least. Lots of hits this series. He's actually, I was looking at his game log. He's rocking a pretty strong on-base streak. I have to count the games, but he's been on base every game dating back to April 11th at this point. So
nice.
He's pretty fascinating. Just a deep league guy. And I saw Bryce Message, or you spelled McCage if you're wondering who Bryce Message is. It's M-E-C-C-A-G-E. But he's interesting. Like, I thought he was pretty good. I think they're definitely, like, working on developmental stuff with him because he didn't throw a lot of changeups. And I kind of wanted to see that, like, more changeups. Fastball was 93-95, slider 83-86, curve was the mid-70s. He didn't have a great feel for the curveball, but I like the fastball slider combo. He threw a couple changes in the mid-80s, but I'm kind of looking at him as like a young prep arm. It's like, yeah, I think there could be something here. He just turned 19, so I'm pretty fascinated with him. He's 2.5 mil bonus last year, and he's been good so far. I mean, he's got a sub-1 whip and 4 starts, so that's obviously pretty encouraging. He does have a pretty bad start on the ledger where he didn't get out of the first and allowed 3 earned with 3 walks. But I mean, I saw 4 and a third, 2 hits, no walks, 4 strikeouts. It was like, it was good, but not like really, really good. But you can see why the Brewers gave him that bonus. So, yeah, a lot of rambling about Brewers prospects. There were a lot to see, though.
They're all – it's warranted with how good this farm system is right now. And you know, that's not even to mention some of the other guys that are – at higher levels, obviously, you know, Jacob Mizierowski's been one of the most fun pitching prospects in baseball. You got, you know, Tyler Black, you got Cooper Pratt, you know, Brock Wilkin, etc., Jefferson Cairo, Casey Hunt. A lot of fun prospects. I think I have like, I don't know, 12 in my top 250 or something like that. But so yeah, Breylon Payne, yeah, I'm not ready to go top 10 on Breylon Payne. Yeah, I have him. I just stuck him in the back end of my top 100.
Yeah, that's fair.
Right now, and Luis Peña, and I now have my top 50 at 48 overall currently. But Jesus Mata is definitely pushing, you know, top 10. He might be there for somebody already. Where do you have Mata in your overall rankings, Chris?
It's like 25. So
okay.
I think there's room to grow. I think I could probably push him. Like, I was just looking at the names around him. Like, you know, I look at a Leo DeVries. Like, I still prefer DeVries to him. Like, Zaire Hope. Connor Griffin is definitely like Griffin over him after seeing him. Like,
yeah,
Griffin's
awesome.
Yeah, like Bryce Rainer, that's a close one. I think if you look and say like Mata or Rainer, like we're getting pretty close there. I think Mata, like around the 20th spot for me, but also like, do I drop Emmanuel Rodriguez? I have Emmanuel Rodriguez like one spot ahead of Mata. Do I bump down McGonagall because he can't stay healthy kind of thing? Like, you know, so there's some guys that are ahead of him. They're like, yeah, it's possible that he could move up to like 15. But yeah, it's a fascinating group there with like, how high do you go? So yeah, I mean, he certainly could pop. I can see the intangibles being there for Mata to like really take off. And all of a sudden you're like, yeah, like he's better than DeVries or Hope. You know, he's in that range with, like, you know, Travis Bezzana, or, you know, like, I'm way back in on Marcelo Meyer. I've got Marcelo Meyer fourth right now. Like, can he get back to that range? I don't know, you know?
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting here, especially, you know, Christian Campbell is going to graduate, what, next, like, yeah, next week or so, I believe. Yeah. You'll get, you know, obviously Nick Kurtz is up, so you assume he'll stay up and graduate soon. You assume Anthony will be up soon. So you're going to have, you know, like, three of the top guys graduate. You know, Jackson Job will graduate probably sometime in, like, you know, late May, early June, something like that. And then it just, I think it's becoming really wide open. Like, there's a lot of guys that could take that jump and be the next, you know, top guy. Obviously, you know, guys like Jenkins, but hasn't played much this year. He's only played like two or three games. Yep. You know, Walcott has an upside, a Max Clark, you know, Hope, DeVries, Griffin, you know, DePaula, Mate, et cetera. So many guys that, like, could, but, you know, I can't tell you with any certainty, like, what my top 10 will look like in June. Like, I don't, you know, while the draft class upcoming, like, there's no guy that you're like, oh, yeah, that guy will be top 10 right away. Like, there's no, like, superstar, at least not for me, in that draft class. So, yeah, it's going to be kind of these guys, and let's see who kind of emerges here over the next, you know, few months here, especially after some of these big names graduate. But, yeah, Milwaukee, really fun. A lot of names on the rise there. The target for sure. All right, so let's talk about some guys that aren't doing so hot so far, notable prospect names that are struggling to open the season over the first, you know, we got what, about a month in the books of AAA and like what, three and a half weeks or whatever of the other three full season levels. Let's start with Carson Williams of the Tampa Bay Rays. You know, he's one, you know, that's just striking out way too much right now, and that's probably going to be pretty consistent trend on this list, I'm sure. But remember, he's still 21 years old in AAA with a lot of other good skills in the profile. But the one red flag has been, you know, the hit tool, making contact, keeping the K rate in check. This season, in 88 plate appearances, 176, 307, 297 slash line, one home run, three steals. He is walking near 15% of the time, but also has a 38.6% strikeout rate in AAA right now. You know, are you any more worried right now? Because this, like we mentioned, this has always been a concern with him. Are you any more worried than you have been? Or do you think this is just a rough start to the season and he'll kind of get back going to the spot where he usually has been?
Yeah, you know, I think that with Carson Williams, it's always, you know, been contact issues. I'm not, like, super worried yet, if I'm being honest, because I'm not going to sit here and tell you, like, it's the same as it's always been. That's not true. His contact rate is down pretty substantially from where he's been in the past. But what I am going to tell you is that I do believe that we'll see that bounce back from him. It's just an adjustment. And honestly, like, Williams has done this at the beginning of every new level he's been at. I mean, people are going to drop him. Drop him in rankings, that is, because they're going to look at this and say, oh, the strikeout rate, he's not good. He's a gold glove shortstop. He's got plus power. He's got plus speed. I'll take my chances here on a 21-year-old furthering his development with a hit tool. I'm honestly not all that worried. Like, I would say my worry on Carson Williams compared to where I was preseason is like 20%. It's like 2 out of 10. I'm not worried about him.
Yeah, no, my long-term thought on him hasn't changed. I mean, this is probably a guy that hits 240 in that range, but there's 20-20 upside. He could be just a good four-category guy that, you know, is below average in one and above average in the other four, while providing elite defense that'll help keep him in the lineup through his struggles, because it's a potential gold glove caliber, and he's still hitting the ball hard this year. You know, average EV, 92.5 miles an hour, hard hit rate, 40%, barrel rate just under 10%. So he's still hitting the ball hard, you know, still stealing a few bags here. Just, yeah, contact skills are not great right now. He's running, is that right? Is that about 54% overall? Am I seeing that correct?
Yeah.
And then if you look at in zone here, it's probably not much better here. In zone for Carson Williams is around 65%. That's not great either. So yeah, definitely a red flag there. But yeah, I'm not terribly worried about him right now. This next guy, though, I am starting to get a little, you know, not for like one specific reason, but kind of just a few reasons, you know, combined together make me wonder, should I be ranking him as highly as I have been? And that's Emmanuel Rodriguez of the Minnesota Twins. You know, Rodriguez so far this year has yet to hit a home run, which was very surprising, in 78 plate appearances in AAA, 231, 359, 277 slash line. So the one thing he's always done and is continuing to do this year is get on base thanks to a high walk rate, near 17%. However, 34.5% K rate is still an issue for him. That's been there kind of for a good bit now. You know, quality of contact is very good, but he just has a hard time staying healthy. The K rate, he's too passive. Like, I'm not saying he's bad, Chris, but should Erod be ranked as a, you know, I mean, he's been top 15 for me for, you know, I don't know how, a good while now. Should he be still ranked in that elite rank? What are your thoughts?
I mean, the upside's legit. Like, there's no doubt about that. Like, if he clicks, he's gonna click, like, and it's gonna be really, really legit for Emmanuel Rodriguez. I am really fascinated to see if he can stay healthy at any point in his career. Like, that's obviously an issue. I mean, he's got a thumb strain now. Like, it's, if it's not one thing, it's another.
Right.
For him, it's just always something. And so, yeah, I think that the contact rates have always been an issue. Like, this isn't a new thing, new development for him, much like with Carson Williams, that is. So I look at the zone contact. Yeah, it's below average. The overall contact's below average. Chase rate is up. I mean, last year he chased it like a sub 10% clip. It's still at 20%. It's an elite mark still. But, you know, I'm not taking away much from a 78 plate appearance sample. What I am taking away from is that he cannot stay healthy, and that's the issue. But, I mean, the reality is, like, it's plus power, plus glove, maybe plus above average run. Like, it's legit profile. It's just contact is the question. It's like, honestly, like Carson Williams in the outfield, but he can't stay healthy.
Yeah, that's the thing. I 100% agree that if everything clicks, he can stay healthy. You know, this is going to be a really fun player and potentially an elite player in OBP formats. But I'm starting to wonder, like, can everything click? Can he stay healthy enough for everything to click? I mean, you know, it's immense talent, but he's missed so much time, you know, over the last few years. And like I said, it's always something with him. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not dropping him terribly far. He'll still be top 25, but you know, this is a guy that was top 10 for me preseason. I think he jumped into that top 10 some point around this time last year, but I don't know. I think I got to drop him a little bit here. I'd rather have, just kind of looking back at that cluster we were talking about. I mean, I'd rather have Hope right now. I'd rather have DeVries, Griffin, you know, Made, DePaula. I think he's going to be down in that, you know, Kobe Mayo range, Jack Caglione, you know, Felton Celestin, that range for me. So, which is still, that's still top 25. So, still highly ranked, but he definitely have concerns here that he can stay healthy. That's the thing with him. Next guy on the list, Ethan Salas, who, is he ever going to, like, turn 20? I mean, he's still only 18. I feel like Ethan Salas is going to be, like, 18 or his entire life or something like that, but you know, double A this year for him has not treated them well so far. 188, 325, 219 slash line. It's already been 41 play appearances, not as much of a sample size as the other names here, but only one extra base hit. I mean, he's not striking out. Like, he's the one guy on this list that is not striking out. He actually has more walks than strikeouts right now, but still a rough start to the year here. Does have a couple of steals, though. You know, I don't know if there's more polarizing prospect over the last couple of years than Ethan Salas, just given his immense rise to double A as a 17-year-old, and then the struggles, and he kind of bounced back. Now he's struggling again. I feel like the prospect community is pretty split on him. I've obviously been on the lower end of that on Ethan Salas, I should say. I mean, where are you at on him now, Chris? I mean, obviously still insanely young in general and for the level especially. So what are your thoughts here on Ethan Salas? You looking to buy low, or are you concerned?
Yeah, I don't think so at this point. Like, it's kind of not a good situation. Is he a really good defensive catcher? yes, is the hitting there? Man, I don't know. And I honestly liked what I saw in the AFL. Like, I really liked the approach. I thought that the eye was really good at the plate. Obviously, he's silky smooth catching. But, man, it's really hard to justify rostering him in a fantasy league because how much does it matter? Like, cool. Like, he's made a lot of contact his entire career. He's run really good chase rates, but he's not producing. And, like, I'll take a bad catcher that hits, like, Augustin Ramirez versus somebody like Salas who's buttery behind the plate but doesn't produce any fantasy stats that matter. So, not much interest there, to be honest with you at this point. Like, he's fading pretty hard for me.
Yeah, so he just doesn't impact the ball enough. Like, he's shown flashes, and I'll even admit that. He's shown flashes, and I agree. He looked great when we were out there in Arizona back in, you know, late October, early November, but it's only been in flashes. So I think the real question is, like, did San Diego just mess him up by pushing him as hard as they did? I think that's a legit question.
Probably.
To ask. I mean, and you know, they're doing it, you know, not to the same level, but they're pushing DeVries. I mean, he's super young for the level as well, but was there any need to push a 17-year-old to double A two seasons ago? I think that's a bit much. So maybe they just kind of messed up his development. You know, I don't know. But yeah, I've been kind of not out the door on him, but lower than most, and that's not changing anytime soon. But is he still top 200 for you right now?
I think so, but I'm kind of questioning it, honestly. Yeah. Like, I think he's probably the biggest prospect with, like, real-life discrepancy and fantasy discrepancy, honestly.
Yeah, no, that's very safe to say. I currently have him at 213 right now, behind. Now he's behind a cluster of catchers, behind, like, Blake Mitchell, Jefferson Cairo, Carter Jensen. I mean, can't say he has a million catchers, but yeah, he's definitely fallen pretty hard for me as well. Next one up is Colson Montgomery, who I believe we talked about a few weeks ago on this podcast, but hasn't gotten any better for Montgomery. Does have 3 home runs in 91 plate appearances. So that's something, I guess. Only one extra base hit outside of those 3 home runs, which was a double. Overall, 169, 242, 289 slash line for Montgomery, and still running insanely high, 42.9% strikeout rate and only a 6.6% walk rate. You know, how concerned are you right now with Colson Montgomery? Obviously, he had the struggles last year, and those have just continued and gotten worse this year. So where are you at on Montgomery at this point?
I think it's just complete mental thing. He's pressing a lot. If you look at all the underlying data, it's pretty similar. Similar zone contact, but the overall contact's down because he's chasing 10% higher than he has, like, throughout his minor league career, and he's not making contact on those pitches he's chasing on. He's pressing a lot. And he's working on some mechanical adjustments with the swing, which doesn't help. Like, they're trying to tweak some things in the swing. He added weight. He got stiff. There's a lot of factors going on here, and I believe that's one of the reasons that they sent him down pretty quick in spring training. Like, everybody's like, wow, he went down pretty quick. They're trying to work on swing adjustments is what they're doing. And when you're doing that, like, you're going to see some ups and downs with him. People were just chatting in the Discord about, like, do you just cut him? Do you sell super low? If you've held on to Colson Montgomery this long, you better keep riding that train. You're not going to get anything for him. It doesn't matter. Right. Like, and looking at all the data, like, I just don't think he's any different of a hitter. Like, he still hits the ball hard. He can still barrel it up. He's still making good in-zone contact. It's just that he's chasing, and I believe that he's pressing, and he's going through a swing change. Like, they're changing things mechanically. He's going to struggle. So, I mean, this is a big dollar signing that they're going to put a lot of time and effort into. I probably wouldn't just sell for the nature of getting rid of him, like, at this point. If you're still holding on to him on April the 27th, 2025, and you've held through some rough stretches for years, like, just keep holding on to him, honestly. Wait for a good stretch. If you want to sell, then you can, but I'm not suggesting to sell right now because you're going to get 20 cents on the dollar.
Yeah, selling right now is not a good thing whatsoever. I mean, if you're in a league where, you know, you roster 100, 150 prospects, something like that, and you want to drop him, I guess that's one thing. If there's somebody else, like a hot name that's rising up rankings right now, maybe a Braylon Payne's available in that type of, you know, depth of a league, we'll see. But yeah, definitely if the goal is to trade him, yeah, not a good time for that. But I mean, I still think he could be a decent hitter. Just, I don't know. Can he be that impact bat? And I've always questioned it, so I'm not thinking of a good outcome here for him. I think he's maybe a second division regular, you know, probably get some run as a starter for the White Sox, but I do question if he's ever that impact bat. Next name here, Christian Moore, who there was rumors he was going to maybe break camp with the team. Obviously, that did not happen, and probably a good thing because he has struggled pretty mightily so far, you know, in Double-A Rocket City, you know, the good old trash pandas there. Yet to hit his first home run of the year in 75 plate appearances. Does have two doubles and two triples. 167, 320, 267 slash line. Good walk rate so far, near 19%. He's got 14 walks so far, but also a 32% strikeout rate. And does have three steals, though. I mean, a lot of hype on this guy, Chris, you know, with you know, those rumors of him breaking camp with the team. And, you know, coming off a very good collegiate year leading up to the draft last year, you know, what are your long-term thoughts here on Moore? Because after that really hot start where he had, what, like six home runs and eight games or whatever it was, he's actually struggled getting back to last year. Like the last like 3-4 weeks for him last year weren't that great either. So where are you at on Christian Moore now, and kind of where does he fall in your rankings?
Yeah, I mean, he's an interesting one to rank. I'm still trying to figure out where in the world to put him, how much do I drop him, kind of thing. He should be hitting better than he is, in my opinion. I get it. The Southern League's a really crappy place to hit. The worst hitter's environment in the minors of any league. But that doesn't negate the fact that you're striking out 32% of the time. It doesn't negate the fact that you're not swinging at pitches you should be and are making contact like 66% of the time, which that's worrisome, honestly. So I don't love seeing that. I don't love to see the less aggression. Cool, you're walking more. That ain't going to get you to the big leagues. Like, I need to see the slug. I need to see the contact skills improve. I don't know. I don't think that Christian Moore is a top 100 prospect for me right now. I just can't really get behind that at the moment. And it's not looked great this year. And it hasn't looked great dating back to last year, too, as you mentioned. So that was just another kind of a nail in the coffin where I think that he's probably going to be in like my 100 to 120 range.
Yeah, right now I'm having that thought process as well. Like, do I keep him top 100? At this very second, he's 98 for me. That's probably a good change and probably go down as opposed to going back up. Because I think I like some of these guys below him a little bit better. But, I mean, the upside is there to be, you know, a good power bat at a position that doesn't really have a lot of power at second base. So I'm not out on him by any means. But, yeah, the fact that it's been a good struggle dating back to last year, like I mentioned. And, you know, can he hit for contact and power at the same time? You know, can he find that good middle ground? We'll see. That's something that some guys can find that, you know, good middle ground. Other guys can't, and they go one way or the other. So we'll see with Christian Moore, because right now it's not been great. That similar kind of struggle, you know, between contact and power has been there for this guy as well. I was off to a slow start to the year. Aurelvis Martinez with the Toronto Blue Jays, currently slashing 145, 232, 274 in 69 plate appearances for AAA Buffalo. Two doubles, two home runs, but a 39.1% strikeout rate. Just not making contact at all right now. Contact rate is around 53%. Overall exit velocity, about 85.5 miles an hour. Only a 3% barrel rate. So, you know, he's a guy that, again, has struggled making consistent contact and hitting the ball hard at the same time. Usually was doing one or the other. Now it's kind of both of them aren't there. Zone is around 75% zone contact, which is below average as well. I don't know. Are you fading Aurelvis at this point, Chris? I mean, I don't. I've never been a big Aurelvis guy. I kind of wonder if he just kind of falls out of favor, gets passed over eventually by Arjun Namala. I mean, he's already higher in my rankings, but I mean, you know, like the depth chart. Once Namala gets a little older, a little closer to the majors. Do you see Aurelvis as, you know, a major league regular and potential, you know, fantasy relevant player?
He could be fantasy relevant because of the power, but I'm not sure that he's going to be more than like a below average regular that hits some bombs at this point. I mean, he just hasn't made the strides you want to see. The contact's actually going in the wrong direction, which not ideal here. And he's chasing more. I don't know. I haven't loved what I've seen. The data doesn't really love him either. So that's a little concerning in my book. He doesn't have a great position in the field, so that doesn't help either. Right. And so then all of a sudden you're like, man, how does this guy fit into the picture? And I'm not sure he does right now. Like, this team could have a spot for him too, which is, you know, that's the thing. Like, they could find a way to get him into the lineup, but he's just not forcing his hand. Like, they've got Will Wagner playing third. They've got Ernie Clement playing third. Like, I don't know. Like, or Elvis just, I get he's young, 23, but he's not really made the strides that you want to see from him.
Yeah, you know, they've had a lot of opportunities between Aurelvis Martinez and Addison Barger to really kind of take a spot, you know, at multiple different spots. You know, Barger, you know, Aurelvis has played kind of all over the infield, you know, Barger, you know, a little bit on the left side, a little bit in the outfield as well. Neither one of them have done much with any opportunity they've been given. So I kind of wonder, are either one of them a major league regular? I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of Toronto's farm system in general, but yeah, I don't know if we ever see either of those guys as any fantasy relevant player. Martinez, I have more faith in than Barger, but I don't know. I don't know if we ever see Martinez as more of a, you know, 230, 20 homer guy or something like that. But last name on the list here, Cole Young of the Seattle Mariners. In 112 plate appearances so far, Young is slashing 191, 321, 245, zero home runs, zero steals, so not giving you any fun power speed there, but only striking out 17% of the time, walking 12.5%. He's actually one where the metrics here aren't terrible so far this year. You kind of look under the hood. Doesn't really match up with the kind of poor surface stats that you're seeing from Young. I mean, contact rate is just a hair under 80% right now. Average EVs are on 89 miles an hour, 42% hard hit rate, 9% barrel rate. So he's still, you know, decent quality of contact, decent overall contact. And, you know, I've never been the biggest Cole Young guy, so I think he's, you know, the upside's pretty limited there. Maybe he's only like a 10 homer, 10 steal guy or something like that. But, you know, I don't think he's going to, you know, have a terrible slash line all year. I think he will get it going at some point. I just don't have a lot of hope in the upside long term. But, you know, where are you at now on Cole Young? I feel like there's a pretty wide range of rankings on him right now, too.
Yes, there are. And I think Young's an everyday major league player. I do believe that. I'm not sure that it's for fantasy, though. Like, what's the appeal? That's my struggle, is like, you know, what is it that gets you excited about Cole Young for fantasy? He played in a very pitcher-friendly environment last year in Arkansas. So, okay, 9 homers, 23 stolen bases, 271, 369, 390. I get it. Like, there was some appeal still, but the underlying StatCast data wasn't good last year. Like, I don't have it in front of me, but if I'm not mistaken, he went like the final like 2 to 3 months of the season without hitting a ball like over 102. That's not good at all. And sure, he makes a lot of contact. Like, yes, we're encouraged that he's ran contact rates north of 80% at every level that he's played, which that's good. The zone contact rate this year, 88%, like that's in line with where he's been. I think he chased around 15% last time. It's at 23% right now in AAA, so that's worth noting. He's also hitting the ball on the ground a lot more. He has hit a ball 108. He does have a pretty respectable average EV at 89 and a 43% hard hit rate. That'll play. So that's pretty interesting to see from Young. But right now, he's seeing everything on the ground. Slug of 245, not ideal. He's still really young for AAA. He's 21 years, 8 months. So he is young for AAA. And I think that you have to factor that in. I think that Cole Young's just going to be one of those dudes that he's going to play in the majors, and he's going to probably play every day because he's a really good hitter. But for fantasy stats, like, I'm not sure how much he's going to give you, because I don't see the stolen bases, honestly. It's, you look at the last 2 years, and his success rates aren't great, he's not going to get the green light when he's running those kind of success rates. He's an average runner at best. So yes, he stole 22 bases in 2023 and he stole 23 last year. I don't project Cole Young to be more than like a 8 to 10 stolen base type long term. So maybe 5 to 10. When you're not getting home runs, that's an issue. It's just not a profile that I really want to invest in. So yeah, I'd say it's a little bit concerning right now. Just he just hasn't developed the power like you want to see.
Yeah, that's kind of what the synopsis of my write-up was on him when I was doing my Seattle Mariners top prospects. Is like, yeah, he's a decent bat, but he's just unspectacular, I think is the best word I could use. He's decent. Like I said, he's solid. He'll be in the majors. I totally agree with you there. But yeah, is he ever a guy you're going to be excited about drafting for fantasy purposes? Probably not. Probably more of like a back-end guy, back-end middle infield type, but Seattle needs bats. I mean, they're a little bit better this year offensively, I think, but they still are really needing some offense to go with that pitching right now. So I'm sure we'll see Cole Young at some point this year, and I'm sure the slash line will improve. But yeah, I think the long-term upside for fantasy, pretty limited here with Cole Young. All right, that's going to wrap us up. You know, Chris, it's been a fun ride, my good friend here. 388 episodes. We started back in 2020. You know, when everyone and anyone that had a heartbeat started a podcast.
That's true.
I started two of them that year. So I definitely know that. But going from, I mean, what were we at? We were the Fantrax Prospect Tool Shed, right?
Yep.
And then the Fantrax Tool Shed, and then just the Tool Shed. Kind of kept condensing it every year or so. But hey, 388 episodes, was it 1.5 million downloads? Just phenomenal stuff. It's been an absolute honor to do this podcast with you. Like I said, you know, you become one of my best friends, not just in this industry, just overall. And I'm sure we're still going to talk a lot, but it's been a good ride, my friend.
Yep. It's can't believe it's been almost 400 episodes. It's kind of insane. I think we together put it in a spot where I think you'll still be very successful with it, where we created a industry giant, and that's been pretty awesome to do. And it feels weird to step away, but it's been an incredible ride. I want to thank everybody for listening and tuning in. I hope you'll continue to support this show and my show as well. I'll have more on that soon, but I do want to thank everybody and thank Eric as well. It's been an absolute pleasure. And for the final time, 388th time, the 80 Great co-host is signing off. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Felt like the Kobe Bryant speech, like Mamba out. That was a great speech by Kobe.
That was.
But yeah, it's been fun. And yeah, I strongly urge everyone to, I mean, obviously this is why I think it's why it worked out so well with Chris and I for the last 4.5, 5 years is that, you know, he has that, obviously, you know, everyone knows Chris is a phenomenal, being a baseball and prospect analyst in general, but just like that hard work, that drive, that passion, I think that's the biggest compliment I think either of us can get is when people can just say like, hey, we see your passion for this game in your writing, in your podcast, whatever it may be. So that's something that's very rare. So I think that's why it worked out so well with Chris and I. But yep, this show will go on. I'll do it solo for a bit, bring on more guests. So it's not just me rambling every episode, and you know, we'll see what the future holds. But thanks everyone for tuning in again this episode. Hope you enjoyed it. And I will be back with you again next week. But until then, everyone take care.
Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips, with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. Better Man is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.